Hello and welcome back to The Other Side of Perfect. On today's show, I have a conversation with Dr. Ciara Kelly. A former medical doctor, Ciara is also a broadcaster and presents on News Talk Breakfast and writes a column for The Independent. Over the next hour, we discuss the most topical subject of the past year and how to deal with the waves that come with COVID, why so many people love and take part in our 100 Days of Walking Challenge. From anxiety and powerlessness to brighter days filled with hope, Ciara explains how to really dig deep. We also discuss finding yourself in your 40s and changing careers later in life. Before we kick off the show, I want to give a special shout out to my podcast sponsors for this year, Clean Cut Meals, who recently launched their new absolutely delicious menu. Be sure to check them out on cleancutmeals.ie, follow more on my social media accounts, and avail of a 30% off discount code Joanne30 when placing your order. Enjoy the show. Ciara Kelly, I feel rather honoured to have somebody who usually is in my position and hosting the conversation on my show. So I hope I do it justice.
Thanks very much. I don't know that I can live up to such an introduction as that.
I know you're incredibly busy during these times and you have had a consistent career, thankfully, throughout all of this, and you have a busy day today. So I do appreciate you taking the time out to talk to me.
I'm delighted to talk to you. And I suppose, you know, compared to an awful lot of people, I'm very lucky to be busy. Obviously, huge amounts of people are, their businesses are closed, their jobs are gone at the moment. So I think if you're in the position that you are able to keep working, I think that that's a lucky position to be in. And also, to be frank, going to work every day keeps me sane, because I think it's very hard. Our lives have become quite small, and there's a certain privilege in actually being able to go out and go into your job.
Yeah, there's a sense of purpose and focus, I think, and it's just giving that, I suppose it's the get up and go in the morning. It's very, very difficult for people to gain that motivation, especially if they're out of work. And so having exterior focuses of any kind is just imperative. It's nice to be able to work during this time. I'm equally grateful. You have a very interesting background, coupling medicine and obviously discussing current affairs on a daily basis. And it must be a blessing and a curse at the same time right now.
I think it's definitely probably more the blessing than the curse. I worked on the front line for 20 years, so I've been, you know, a frontline healthcare worker. I know exactly how it works in our hospitals because I worked in hospitals for years, and I know exactly how it works in general practice because I did that as well. And it's been hugely useful, I suppose, my background in that. The story of the year has been health related, obviously, and all things to do with it, both people suffering and the illness and the science behind health and all of that, but equally how the health service works, the kind of pressure that it's under, and all of that. But also, I do think the big picture in terms of how the pandemic has affected all our lives, general practice, you are not a specialist of any one thing. You are a It's considered a specialty, but you're a generalist. So you see people in their natural environment, you see them in their homes, you see them in, sort of set in with their families, and you understand intergenerational relationships and also mental health stuff and all of that stuff. So I think it certainly has been helpful to have had the medical background at the moment, because I suppose there's a lot of insight that has come with it.
There's probably a level of empathy as well by virtue of having lived in those days, being on the front line. So you have that extra outreach when you're speaking to people on a daily basis about what they're going through.
Interesting. Yeah, I totally agree about that. And I would have always seen myself as empathetic, but at various times, I know when I was talking about, I had concerns, particularly about lockdown two. I didn't have any concerns about lockdown one. To me, lockdowns are an important short-term intervention where they need to be used. They should be used. But I was afraid when we were going into lockdown two, and we didn't have a vaccine necessarily ready to go. We didn't know when we were going to have it. And we were sort of looking at rolling lockdowns, maybe with no end point in sight. And I was concerned about the harm that comes from that, the mental health, the non-COVID related healthcare, and I issued, you know, sort of not issued. What would you say? I said publicly that I was worried about the balance of harms between the lockdown and COVID, and a lot of people said, "Oh God, how can you say that? That, you know, that lacks empathy." But actually, I think I didn't say any of that, you know. Despite being a doctor, I said that because I'm a doctor, because, you know, about 70% of what we saw in general practice was mental health related. And I do believe that the struggle for people currently is real in terms of their heads and all of that. So, you know, I think it's very, very difficult to get it right in terms of what we do, in terms of our response to the pandemic. But I think we at least need to be aiming to get some kind of a balance where we can. We don't have any choice, obviously, at the moment. The numbers are so high. The numbers in hospital are so high. The number in ICU, they're high as well. And the case numbers are high. So again, lockdown is an absolute given at the moment. But lockdown two, I think, was there was more debate to be had about all of that. But look, you know, the sooner we can get through this, the sooner we see the back of this, the better, because I think it's been extremely hard on people in general.
Yeah, it's just an arduous time to go through because there is a repetition. And what one of my main concerns is, humans, by their very nature, adjust. We adjust very well. But also that's a negative, because there's a lot of people that I speak to kind of opening up my question box to how people are feeling week on week, just checking in, seeing how they're doing, mostly towards the empathy, you know, in the mental health sphere, as opposed to the physical side and the necessity of lockdown and things like that. And the outcry is horrendous. There was a 97% reaction rate of how bad this fallout is, how bad people are feeling, frustrations, anxiety, perpetual doom. And like, that is not a state that we should be becoming accustomed to.
No, I agree with you. And I also agree, you know, I've seen lots of the memes that are out there going, you know, people live through wars. All we're being asked to do is stay home and watch Netflix. Don't be such whiners, kind of thing, as if it's minimized the impact it's having on people. I don't think the impact of this is small. I think there is a sense of, as you say, doom, foreboding, fear. I think all that. And actually, truthfully, I think some of that the media has made worse, and some of that has been a bit deliberate on the part of the state too, because they want us to be a bit worried, because if we worry, we will stay home. Now, at the moment, as I say, we have no choice. We have to stay home. Like, the case numbers are very high, and we will lose lives to this thing if we don't cop on at the moment. But I do think they need to be trying to move to getting us out of this as fast as they can, because I think the impact is bigger than we're, you know, we're hearing the voice of COVID all the time. We're hearing what COVID needs and what we need to do about COVID. The voice of the people who are impacted in terms of their mental health, in terms of addiction, in terms of domestic violence, in terms of all that negative stuff, where is their voice? Their voice isn't being heard. And I know that what we really need here is a little bit of time to march on, and the vaccine is going to change a huge amount of this for us. These case numbers are going to come down now. People are, I think, adhering to the guidelines and all of that. So I think we're on the cusp of things getting better. But I think we also need to be saying that to people, even though I understand why the state isn't saying that to us, because they do want us to sort of stay home and fear will make us stay home. But equally, you got to give people a bit of hope as well. It is hard times. There's no two ways about it. It's been reports in the papers for the last 2 weeks about the number of prescriptions that have gone through the roof for antidepressant and anti-anxiety medication, and indeed that counselling services aren't available the way they were, and all of that. So I just, you know, I do feel our collective fear, our collective stress, our collective anxiety isn't good at the moment. And as I say, the sooner the better we can get to the other side of this, because I do worry. I worry about our young people in particular. Like, you know, I have a 20-year-old and I have an 18-year-old. I have younger kids as well, but I look at the older two, particularly the 18-year-old who was in that class of 2020 that missed out on all the rites of passage around graduation and debs and blah, 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 but is also now in first year in college, having never set foot in a college. You know, it has made no college friends because there is no college. Goes to online classes where there's no real, it's their lecture, so there's no real interaction worth a damn between herself and other students. And she's reasonably robust and still has her school friends and all that too. But their lives, you're having your life put on hold for a year at 18 is very significant and quite different to maybe having your life put on hold for a year at, you know, 50 or 60 or whatever way our lives have been put on hold, you know, 40. I think young people, the narrative has been largely that they're terrible and they're all out socializing and giving each other and everyone else COVID. But actually, I think the level of unnaturalness to how they're living is significant.
You know, these pivotal moments you speak of: graduation, weddings, funerals, Debs, going to college, having freshers week, having that excitement around new peers. Dating, you know, dating went downhill a few years ago with the introduction of dating apps. But now I speak to women who are single, who are friends of mine, who are in their 30s. How are they supposed to date? It's these virtual Skype, you know, dating, and then they're not in within a 5K, and then they're either illegally meeting up or they're not meeting up at all. And there's this fight or flight consistent state we're in, which is just not healthy, no matter how much you're getting up and getting on with it and doing your tools of getting through and powering through. We're inevitably scared of this beast that is bigger than us. So I just can't wait for us to be out of that state, because we are pausing our life until someone else, the powers that be, do the rest of the work.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I would know friends of mine who are in their 40s who are single, who have said things to me like, you know, this year where I've basically put my dating life on hold, I would have thought if I was ever to have children, I needed to meet somebody now because I'm in my early 40s kind of thing. And I'm wondering, will this pandemic change that to the extent that now I'll never have a family because of the age I'm at? You know, time was limited anyway, and a great big chunk of that time has been scuppered in terms of, you know, their ability to meet people. So I've spoken to friends of mine who are women and were hoping to have children, you know, meet someone and have children in the next while, and are wondering now, is that hope ever going to be realized? And those are big things for people. Those are really big life things for people.
Yeah. And it's funny because the two things that we always say, you know, health is our wealth. There's one thing that's being massively affected at the moment. And then on the flip side is you can never get time back. And ironically, the two, it's like a juxtaposition. The two of them are fighting against each other because we're trying to save ourselves and our health. And yet time is being paused for us, and we're not able to move in the way we want. So it's a strange irony.
Yeah. And I suppose the truth is we're dealing with very complicated issues here. We're dealing with a significant threat to public health, to national health, that lives will be lost because of. So the COVID pandemic, you know, it is this threat, and it is a real threat. But as you say, the fallout from pausing life for quite a prolonged period of time now, the fallout from that has all other kinds of consequences and ramifications too. And these are challenging things to deal with. They're not simple and they're not binary. And it isn't, this is the good way, that's the bad way. They're unfortunately, it's sort of about feeling our way and trying to get the least worst outcome for everybody. That's, I think, the only way forward. But also, you know, when you see sort of some of the discourse online, it's very indicative of how people are feeling, because apart from the fact that lots of people are talking about, yes, struggling and all that, there's huge levels of anger and aggression and people lashing out at each other, huge levels of people blaming each other for things. And those are all just, I suppose, truthfully, the angry discourse, the blame, they're symptoms of fear. And fear, you know, I have said before, I think that 2020 was the year of fear, I think. And I'm really, really hoping that 2021 can be the year of hope.
You're a mum, and you're obviously equally dealing with your own personal scenarios outside of juggling a career and just getting through this the way all of us are trying to do in the best way possible. Obviously, we have a vaccine rollout, but I get the heavy impression at the moment that there is no set plan or structure outside of that, bar consistently going in and out of lockdown. Now, I know you don't have the answer to that, and I don't have the answer to that. We're kind of in this state of limbo, doing what we're told, doing what's best, but equally, there's no end in sight for people. So as a mum, what do you say to parents who are extremely overwhelmed and massively frustrated at the moment?
Yeah, and I think parents are particularly overwhelmed this week, because this is the week that children went back to online schooling. Today is, what day are we today? Wednesday. On Monday, the online school sort of situation kicked off again. And that's really hard. And I know lots of people are cooped up with their family 24/7, largely, in houses that aren't huge, where maybe one or both parents are working from home, and then one or more children are doing the homeschooling. Very overwhelming, very, very difficult, no doubt about it. What I would say to them is keep the faith, keep your head, because this too will pass. I do believe that there is an enormous desire on the part of government to get schools back open as soon as possible. I don't think we will see the kind of almost asher, we'll just leave them closed till the summer holidays sort of thing that we, you know, that there wasn't the same impetus it felt in lockdown one to reopen the schools. And even though other schools reopened in Europe in April and May and June, and we just went all the way through. So I do think there's a big push to get the kids back into school as soon as it's safe and reasonable to do so. I also think that, and my hope is that this is the last lockdown, that I don't believe for a minute it'll be over at the end of January. I think we will be looking at maybe the end of February or possibly closer to a Paddy's Day thing. I have a feeling that Paddy's Day is what they'll actually bring us up as far as before they ease things at all. And they will be able to ease things for two reasons. One is the case numbers will be low, but two is at that stage, the vulnerable in nursing home and care home settings will be vaccinated. Most of the front line will be vaccinated, and a reasonable chunk of the elderly in general will be vaccinated. And that will mean that we have, you know, even though when they open up again, will cases start to climb again? Yes, very possibly. But the truth is that the vulnerable are the people who were, they're the ones who are going to get sickest, unfortunately, and they're the ones who are at risk of dying mostly from this. And if they're protected, that gives us an ability to creep back towards normality a little bit, I think. So I think a lot of it is about keeping the faith and just going, you know, this isn't forever. This is probably the last lockdown. And you know, come the later spring, we're going to be coming out of it. But I think that certainly is what keeps me going. But to me, you know, I'm a massive advocate of walking. And I think if I didn't walk every day, I'd go semi-insane. So I would advise anybody to try and get out of their house, get out of their bubble for at least half an hour a day, and listen to some music, listen to a podcast, listen to something that is uplifting in some way that makes them feel good. I quite listen to, you know, a lot of people in my line of work listen to Current Affairs all day long. So I take walking time as no Current Affairs, and I tend to listen to quite loud music and kind of fairly upbeat music too, lots of RPMs, and bop along to that. And that helps me. But I think you've got to get a bit of fresh air. You've got to get out of the house. You've got to get away from the people you're living with 24/7, and maybe a small bit of exercise, because we're very limited in what we can do. And I think you have to try and take the little nuggets of good in your life and amplify them as best you can.
I totally agree. And it brings me on to something that struck a chord with me that you put up just the other day. I'm taking part in your 100 days of walking, as are most of the country, from what it seems on your stories, which is absolutely fantastic.
I love it. Yeah. And that actually makes me feel a solidarity sort of thing with each other. It's good. It's you know, something kind of in it together. I know you can be in it together, in it together, meaning that we're all in the bad stuff together, but we can be in the good stuff together too. And I think there's a great community of walkers out there, and I love seeing people's pictures, and it does make me happy to see people doing something good for themselves. It just gives me a lift.
And I'm sure that collective feel is across the board. And that particular Instagram post that struck a chord with me, you mentioned anxiety and powerlessness, and that perfectly depicts how so many of us feel at the moment. And that exercise helps nullify both at the same time.
Yeah. And I try and be honest. You know, I don't live an Insta life. Do you know what I mean? I try and, like, there are days when I go, yay, this is fantastic, I'm really enjoying it and I'm getting a great buzz off it. And then there are days, and you'll see that over the 100 days, like I remember there was one Insta post I put up last year where I was nearly in tears going, I don't want to go for a walk. It's 11 o'clock at night. I've worked all day. And if I break the chain, I've ruined it for all of us. And I was knackered. And I will kind of say that. But on Sunday, I don't know why I was feeling that way on Sunday, but I was. And I sort of said the two feelings I'm having anxiety. And it was all about the future and the COVID numbers and the doom and the gloom and all that. It was getting in on me. So I was having that. But also that sense, exactly as you say, powerlessness, where, like, I can't change this and you can't change this. So none of us individually can change this. Our our fate is in each other's hands in a way, and in the government's hands and all of that. And that does create a lack of feeling empowered, and empowerment is a positive thing. So I was feeling that, but I guess the walking is the one thing I can do. I can go out for a walk every day and I can go, well, that ticks a box of some small achievement with my day. So that helps me. And, you know, 100 days of walking wasn't some clever PR thing. I remember after I launched into it on social media, my boss in News Talk was like, why didn't you even say to us you were doing this? It's a great thing. And I said, I don't know, I didn't even think of it. It only kind of came to me when I was sitting at home having eaten a load of mince pies that I need to do something in the new year. And so it was a simple thing that I was going to do. And actually, I think the simplicity of it is what resonates with people. It's simple, it's free. No one's trying to get you to sign up £7 a month or whatever. Do you know what I mean? There's none of that. It's not selling you anything other than a kind of a small positive. And it helps me. It helps me with anxiety. Exercise has always done that. If ever I was stressed when I was both a doctor or working in the media, they're both relatively stressful careers. Getting out and walking or running helped, always helped, and always does help. And I think, listen, you know, if you can get a small win, I'll take it. I'm all about trying to be good to ourselves, really, because I think there's enough stuff going on not good for us at the moment. So you know, take the wins.
And so essentially starting as something very organic, where is it now? I mean, it's obviously turned into a movement almost.
Yeah, you know, and I sometimes use that hashtag as well as 100 Days of Walk and join the movement. It's huge. I don't know, but they're like, you know, I can see sort of when you go onto the hashtags, you can see that there are thousands of people using it, and which is great. And I'm equally sure there are lots of people doing it who don't post about it, because not everybody who does it will be on social media. Certainly a lot of older people aren't on any social media, but like tons of people I know personally, people I've worked with, people I'm friends with, but people, extended kind of networks of people I know, have said to me, oh, my granny's doing it, oh, my cousin's doing it, oh, I'm like, so, you know, it's a great line about 100 days walking, but it has grown legs in a big way. And around the country, I know, because I get the pictures from all over the place, and News Talk get them as well separately to me. There are thousands and thousands of people doing it. So it is an organic movement. And the people who stick with it, I know, speak about it in almost like religious terms about how much of an impact it has on them in terms of the uplift they get. So that's just lovely. That's a lovely, lovely thing. And I'm delighted and proud to be involved in that, really.
And you absolutely should be. And I think that it is just that little glimmer of hope each day and a focus. And also those small changes do turn into and surmount into more super goals, because at the end of the 100 days, I've seen people continue them on. They add on an extra 100. They take up a sport. They do a marathon. You know, little things do lead to bigger and greater deeds. And I think the two things that I get from it is a sense of accountability and community, the latter being essential during these disconnected times.
I love that you say that about the community, because I've always found the community, like last year when I was doing 100 days of walking, I think it was around day 69 or day 70. I wouldn't be able to swear to the day, but I started to feel unwell. I was booked in for a COVID test, and the next thing I had COVID. Now, actually, if you have COVID, provided you don't walk with anyone and you stay away from everyone, you're allowed to go for a walk if you can. I wasn't well enough to. I was pretty sick. I could hardly get out of bed. You know, I stayed on air largely to not frighten people, because I had come out and said I had it. And I came out and said I had it in my naivety to some extent, because I wanted to show people, look, you know, you don't have to be too scared of this. Obviously, it's very serious and it's very important that we deal with it correctly. But don't be afraid. I'm going through it and I'm going to tell you about it. And then I actually found it really, really hard on a daily basis to get out of bed, even though I was working from home and I literally only had to cross the landing to get into the little broadcast kit set up in the hot press. And, you know, there was no way I could have gone for a walk. And I felt really crap that I had started this thing and now I genuinely wasn't fit enough to go out the door. And you say community, the amount of people, I'm not joking you, who sent me messages and also posted under the hashtag, who said, I'm going to do 2 walks a day so that you still have walks under your belt. The amount of people who walked for me, I found that incredibly moving. And to be honest, I was emotionally a wreck at the time as well, because I was feeling so crap. And I used to see their walks, and half the time I'd be in floods of tears. So it was actually a real sense of community there among those walkers, and people I'd never met in my life were walking for me. And it felt very much like I was like a fallen soldier whose comrades were kind of picking them up. It was extraordinary, actually. And, you know, the community is definitely part of it. And yeah, you're right. The accountability, the chain, the posting, the fact that you've done, today is day 13, so you've done 12 walks. Are you really going to throw away the 12 walks, or would you just go out and do the 13th? I do it very much like a one day at a time kind of thing. So you're right, accountability is there. And I think you said that people go on and do other things. I think what 100 days of walking does is it sets up a positive feedback loop. So you say you're going to do this small thing, you do it, and then you feel good because you've achieved your goal. And even if your goal is small, the fact that you've achieved it is really, really good. I'm a great believer in making a small change that you can sustain ahead of these massive changes that people try and embrace, particularly in January, that they will simply not sustain. So the kind of the unrealistic, I'm going to join a gym and work out 6 days a week, I'm going to do a boot camp and lose 2 stone. Like, the odd person will succeed at those grand scale kind of changes, but a lot of people will not. The vast majority will fall by the wayside with them. But small change, and I think this is the key, that you could still see yourself doing this same thing in 6 months' time. If the change you make is something that you believe in your heart of hearts that you could keep going with long term, that's going to be a really positive change in your life, because it's the sustainable small changes that make all the difference to us.
And I think that each day, because we need that focus and we need that drive just for hope, we're actually walking towards brighter days, both in the literal sense, you know, in the physical sense, with spring coming around the corner, and also just hopefully days getting brighter with an end to this. So we're walking, you know, marching towards it.
I keep thinking that myself. Yeah, I keep thinking we're actually walking physically towards, yes, brighter days, but on all fronts. And that's great, isn't it? That's a really good thing. Every day is a day closer.
We are largely disconnected at the moment. We feel hugely connected virtually because of the tools that are there, and where we are in terms of the internet progression and 5G and all of these technical terms. But we are more disconnected than ever by virtue of the fact that we can't physically touch, hug, and you know, hang around with our friends and things like that. So I think whatever gets us into that community feel, although virtual or maybe physical, people who are within close proximity of each other and could do their walks together, socially distance and things like that. It's just, I saw a lovely thing online, and it was basically making your exercise hour into your happy hour. So we can't go to a pub anymore, we can't clink drinks, but you could clink your water bottle and you can go on your walk, and you can just make that momentum and that routine for yourself.
I think solidarity, community, connectedness, they're part of the fabric of our being. They're part of what we need as the pack animals that we are, because that's what humans are. We exist in packs, we exist in tribes, and that's part of our makeup. And we are physically disconnected from a lot of that at the moment. And that's why it feels so unsettling and so unnatural and so jarring. And that sense of disconnectedness is not a natural state of being for us. So I agree. I think anything that plugs you back in to the group, to the hive mind, is a good thing. You know, I was out for a walk yesterday and I bumped into a woman I know, and I don't even know her that well, but she's a lovely person. And I talked to her mainly on things like Facebook, and we chatted away, the two of us, for about 20 minutes. Like, we were literally gabbing away like best friends. And I said to her afterwards, do you know what? It's amazing. We were obviously really eager to talk. There was an eagerness to actually talk to somebody. And I think we miss each other. We miss people. We miss the casual hello or the casual chat that we would have had before, the social nights out. But all of our lives are peppered with social interactions, and we've lost a lot of them. And I think there's a lot of pent up desire. I understand, and I know I've seen a lot of stuff written about the fact that last century, the Roaring Twenties, that didn't have any sense to me why it was a Roaring Twenties. But they were coming off the back of a war and a pandemic. No wonder they were roaring. We'll be roaring too. Give us 2 years' time, and I'd say we'll have baby booms, and we'll be nonstop party animals, because we won't be able to keep away from each other.
Yeah, I see people missing someone spilling a beer on them in a queue for a portaloo in a festival and all of these things. And these are a semblance of, I suppose, where gratitude has creeped in and where we are taking away those small things that we perhaps took for granted. And it's awful in life when something has to be taken away for us to appreciate it, but it's also human nature. And I feel that it's just... you just have to take what you can. You just have to take those nuggets of, okay, but the day we do get to do that, it will be amazing. And likewise, the way you had that chat last night, I mean, God help us. We live in the village of Skull in West Cork. It's beautiful. Our 5K is gorgeous. It's by the sea. But equally, all of those people in the village that we know so well and would stop and chat to for a certain amount of time, you don't see them as often. So our highlight of our day is our postman, Christy. Christy comes to the door and drops my parcels for work. And it's an it's someone else to talk to, you know?
I know. No, I totally know. I equally live by the sea and I know I'm lucky, and I can walk down to the sea in about 3 minutes. And I that's where I do my walk. I do it along the seafront. There's a couple of piers and gravestones and a good long stretch of seafront. And that's where I walk. And it's fantastic and much nicer, I'm sure, than lots of people's places. So I know I'm lucky, but it's monotonous at the same time, because I'm only seeing the same people, and you know, my bubble is small and all of that stuff. Like, I obviously have my family who I live with. There's six of us here in the house, and I know in my head that I should be grateful for all the positives that I have, where I live, my family, all of that. I know that. But equally, there's a lot of stuff that we're all missing. And I think it's okay to acknowledge that too. And I definitely miss people. And I chatted to my own postman yesterday for a bit too. So I know exactly what you mean.
I think there's a sense at the moment that I'm definitely feeling where people are very apologetic for their circumstance. So people are feeling bad to be moaning about X, Y, or Z. I felt guilty about working, because when friends would ask how things are getting on, if I said I was busy, I almost felt this like weighted guilt of, hang on, which person isn't working at the moment or can't work? And should I pretend I'm not busy? And then there's these constants. It's like what you spoke about where, oh, we've been through wars. We're just being asked to watch Netflix. Yeah. But there's relativity here as well. And there's still a huge loss, and it's uniquely affecting every single one of us. It doesn't matter if you're home with six people or no people. There's different elements that are affecting you uniquely. So it's also to be kind and empathetic towards other people's circumstance. From the outset, you may think they've a far better bubble than yours, but we don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, you're right. And I think kindness is a great underrated thing. And I know people have the whole be kind, hashtag be kind, but often it's skin deep, because if you actually look at the people who often use hashtags like be kind, they're often not being very kind. But kindness is a great thing, because kindness not only is the beneficiary of the person on the receiving end of the kindness given a lift from your kindness, you get something too. When you are kind to other people, they get something, but you get something, because you feel better about yourself. It is one of those things. It's like it creates its own form of energy that's kind of contagious, and it's a really important thing. But unfortunately, as I say, I think the fear that has driven a lot of the stuff has driven out some kindness, because I do see online how quick people are. Like, somebody, I saw a thing the other day. There's a Facebook book club I'm in, and it's a big, huge thing. So there's loads of people in it. And somebody had asked a question about delivery times from a bookshop. And somebody else took the head off them and said, you know, what are you doing asking about that? As if like first world problems. And it was a perfectly reasonable question. There was nothing snide in the question. And my guess is that the person who responded so negatively towards the person who posted the question, my guess is that they're just having a really bad day. And unfortunately, because of that, they lash out. And then it creates... that also, a bit like kindness can spread, but that kind of nasty toxicity stuff can spread as well. So we should all be mindful of what we say to each other, because you can hurt each other, and people are already hurting, and that makes them a bit vulnerable. And be careful what you say to or about people in those spaces, because this is not an easy time. We should try and, I suppose, have a bit of patience and tolerance and kindness at the moment. It's important.
Yeah, because that wave of negativity can spread all the faster sometimes. Yeah. And that on social media is obviously so prevalent. And we've got Coco's Law, which is, you know, it's an incredible movement, but it's slow. And you look at, and I've certainly experienced trolling myself in my industry, which gets a very hard time in general, like so many other people in the media and in the public eye, for just merely having an opinion or not having an opinion at all, or having an opinion but it being afraid to vocalize it or feeling that it's redundant, you know, to your specific audience. And it's hard because we all are just trying to navigate as best as possible. And I laugh at you saying that people who are often professing to be kind, a lot of troll accounts often have a bio that says, "Mum of four, kindness is underrated." You're going, hang on a second.
Do you know what it is the people who have the "just stay positive" in their bios and the "be kind" in their bios that are, in my experience, some of the most vicious accounts I've ever come across. And there is viciousness and there is spitefulness and there is you know, insidious kind of critical sort of stuff out there online. And personally, I choose very much not to engage with it anymore because I've been there and done that. And as you say, some of what you get in terms of negativity just comes at you because you have a profile, and therefore you're, you know, it's accessibility. And oh, it's reasonable to kick you because it's as if somebody thinks, oh, you're not a real person. You're not like me because you have a social media account that's bigger or something. But I just, in a way, my magnanimous head goes, look, they're having a bad day. And, you know, it says more about them than about you and all that kind of stuff. But equally, I just think we should all maybe stop and pause before I don't like people who go personally at other people anyway. I don't like that as a thing. And I think now more than ever, maybe there are lessons to be learned about treating each other decently at the moment. They would certainly help us all in general if we were a bit kinder to each other. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and we're in a state of pause. So please pause before you speak, because that energy, you know, we don't need to add any more negative energy to what's going on collectively.
No, there's
it's
enough,
simple
isn't
as
there?
That. Yeah, there's enough. Talk to me. I'm looking out my window right now. It is grey. I can barely see the fields in front of me with the mist. It's raining. I've got to do my walking on dark, dreary days. For people who are listening, who perhaps, and by the way, let me just say, first of all, it's 11:11. Make a wish, everyone. Including you, Kira. You've got to make a positive wish. Okay. At 11:11. I didn't start on your day one. I actually started on the first Monday of this year. So I'm day 9, I believe. So that's okay too. If someone wants to start day one, they'll be behind in the hashtags, but they're still doing it. So if someone is thinking about doing it today or struggling to continue with their day 9 or 12 or 13, how do you dig deep?
Well, what I would say is, first of all, is those days that are harder, but you still go out and walk, those days are really important because it's like you're recommitting to yourself. You're recommitting to do this thing that you said you were going to do for yourself. And you didn't decide to do it to be hard on yourself. You decided to do 100 days of walking to do something positive for yourself. So there are days which will be harder than others, not least because of horrific weather. That can be part of it, but also just sometimes your head will sabotage you as well. So on those days where it's harder, if you still go out, and when you still go out, it's amazing the extra lift you get from those days, because it is like this recommitment to yourself. And I think that's important. I also think it is important on those days when you struggle that if you can't do, I always say a minimum of half an hour, go out for 15 minutes. Go and, you know, somebody that said to me the other day, it's about 6 o'clock in the evening, I can't go out. They said I didn't go out today. I have a bit of a back pain. And I said, first of all, the day isn't over. I'm very hard on people that way. People are always telling me about tea time that they haven't gone out. And I go, that's not over yet. It's another 6 hours. But also, if you are, you know, feeling under the weather, or you could be, you know, anything, shuffle out the door for 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes away from your house and shuffle back again. The fact that you haven't broken the chain, you've sort of maybe not done a fabulous walk, but you kind of did something so that you haven't disengaged. That's what I would say, do. Like, don't disengage, because if you just stop, you tend then to put your head in the sand as an ostrich and kind of go, oh, well, I'm not doing it now. And this week is important. The vast majority of people break New Year's resolutions between about day 11, which was a couple of days ago, and day 19 of January. So the 19th of January is the commonest day that people break these. But anytime from last weekend, which was like, oh, Friday, I want the wine, I want the takeaway, I don't want the walk. From last weekend right the way till the middle of next week, that's the danger zone. If you get through that, you're golden, because once you start to hit around 3 weeks, which is day 21, which is next week, once you hit that, what you're actually looking at then is you have formed a habit, and it starts to feel easier to go out than to not go out. And so all I would say is some days you will have to dig deep, but those days, the satisfaction from doing them is very, very strong. And this is a danger zone time because, you know, the euphoria of the beginning has passed and the kind of the repetitive nature of it, and it hasn't quite formed a habit yet, is an issue. But keep going this week and next week and you will actually have turned a corner till it will be much, much easier after that.
And I feel that it's, for me anyway, less head and more body. So, for example, I've gone back to college. I'm, you know, working, busy. And on those days where I've got all the excuses in the world and a to-do list in front of me, I have to get out of my head and just physically put the wet gear on. So without even giving myself the chance to think about not wanting to do it, I'm physically doing these things. The boots are going on, the hat's going over the head. And I suppose in essence, that's mindfulness, because you're trying to get out of your head in the first place.
Yeah. And there is something very mindful about walking. Running has it too. That repetitive motion, the rhythmic thing, it's quite soothing. And I do find that even at the beginning of a walk, I might be starting to think about things and, you know, trying to sort something out in my head. By the end of the walk, I tend not to be, particularly if it's a longer walk, I tend not to be thinking about anything. I'm listening to the music, I'm letting the breeze blow over me and all that. It is that mindfulness. It is that staying in the moment, staying in the present. And that's one of the really therapeutic things about it. But yeah, absolutely.
Like many women, I have fluctuated in weight. I have shared that online. And I know that you have also lost, was it 3 stone at one point? You dropped a decent amount of weight on your journey. What did you attribute to sustaining that loss? Because I think that's huge with women. It's one thing having a goal, New Year's resolutions, wanting to be more fit, healthy, walking, whatever it is. But sustenance, like keeping something up, is tough. So just like the walking, what do you attribute to that?
When I was at my heaviest, it was at the end of my pregnancy on my fourth child. And I've never been anything like that weight since. And I would have been like a size 16 then, and I would be now a size 10 to 12. So that was, I think probably it wasn't my natural weight, if you know what I mean. I think I was at a weight that was heavier than my natural default weight. I think I'd had 4 kids. I think I was in my kind of mid 30s, and I think I was, had sort of lost sight of myself, which is why that weight had gone on. And once I had my fourth child, the weight started to, weight comes off fairly handy if you're breastfeeding after a pregnancy anyway. So the weight started to fall off quite a bit anyway. And then I was changing personally, I suppose, at that time. I often think for women that when you, this is the good news about aging. I think in your 20s, you don't really necessarily, a bit like in your teens, you're not really sure of who you are. A lot of your time is spent forming relationships with friends, maybe forming relationships with lovers, forming kind of, you know, lasting partnerships that lots of people go on and meet their life partner at that stage. So a lot of it is about friendships and romantic relationships in your 20s. I think for an awful lot of people start their families in their 30s. And so for women, a lot of their 30s is about their kids, because small kids need 24/7 care, really. So I think the 20s are defined by relationships with friends and kind of lovers. And then the 30s are defined by relationships with children. And I think in your 40s, it starts to become a little bit more about your relationship with yourself. And I very much recognized me coming back to the person I was literally nearly in my teens rather than my 20s or my 30s when I got into my 40s. I became much less concerned with what people thought. I became much less concerned with the judgment of others, with the approbation of others, and I became much more willing to try things even if I was going to fail at them, willing to be a little bit braver about my life choices, all of that sort of stuff. And that seemed to coincide with weight kind of falling off me relatively easily, because I almost feel I had been in a rut towards the end of my 30s. And that's not to say that it wasn't a happy decade. I had my four gorgeous children and they were young. But jeepers, I was a bit like a passenger in my own life, as in it was all day, every day about other people. It was always sort of, you know, I think I came last on my list. And as your children get a bit older, that changes, because their needs are not quite as acute, and you're not on duty 24/7. Not really. I mean, obviously, if there's something wrong with them, you would still be. But as they get older and can feed themselves and dress themselves and wash themselves and they go to bed and they go to school and they do all that stuff, you get a sense of independence again. And I think I've no great dietary tips or no great anything. I do tend to sort of watch what I eat. And I try certainly during the week to be someone who eats very healthy during the week. It kind of goes to shit a bit at the weekends, I'll be very honest with you, but I don't really mind, because that kind of balances out. If you're kind of, you know, eating very healthily during the week and not so much at the weekends, you kind of tend to stay the same. I'm carrying a few pounds from Christmas, like everyone else at the moment, that I do need to shift, and I will, because Christmas to me is like, I don't really care. I'll eat all the turkey sandwiches and the mince pies and everything. I don't really worry about it too much. But I think a lot of what clearly changed for me in terms of weight was becoming happier in myself, I think, and more, not selfish or not more self-centered or not more focused on myself, but just regaining a sense of who I was in some way, that I think parenting and marriage and life, I just think women in their 20s and their 30s, it's a bit different. If you're not in your 40s yet, what I would say to you, good for you. You have it all to look forward to. And it's mostly extremely positive.
And it sounds almost like a road to self-discovery, I suppose, because those elements of reliance on you as an individual slip away organically, so that there's less of a focus and highlight on you having to achieve things, do things, tick things, help people. And you just be more mindful of yourself. I suppose it just naturally happens. One of the things that came in when I put up a question box for what people may want to ask you, and we'll end on this because I think that it came up a lot, and it was to do with your career change. And I suppose at the moment, with the amount of time that some people have on their hands or reflection, people are looking at different options, or perhaps they have no choice. They may be out of work by virtue of these lockdowns. Their business may not have been able to sustain throughout this. So for career changes, what firstly made you move in different directions, and also any advice you'd give to anyone looking to do so in later life?
First of all, don't be afraid, and don't think that because you are not 22 that you can't change career. I think, you know, we've long lives ahead of us. We'll probably all still be alive in our 90s, and that's a long time away, even for me. I'm still in my 40s. So don't be afraid to do something, and don't let age hold you back from making yourself happy. What made me want to change was weirdly two things. One was change itself. I wanted change itself. It wasn't that I was unhappy as a doctor. I wasn't. I liked being a doctor. It's a really good career. I found it deeply satisfying. I loved my patients. And so I didn't change away from something that I didn't like to find something that I did like. I changed away from something that I did like for change itself, because I went, you know what, I've done this now. I've worked as a doctor for 20 years, more than 20 years by the time I stopped. And I had been training to become a doctor for 6 or 7 years before that. So that was most of my life at that point had been spent in either studying or working in medicine. So I just thought, am I going to do this forever? Will there be no other adventures out there? Will there be no other chapters in my life? And the idea of a new chapter was very appealing to me. So change itself kind of motivated me. And a new challenge motivated me, because I do like a challenge. I'm a bit odd that way. I like pushing myself. Some people do and some people don't, and I do. So the fact that something is hard and maybe going to be an uphill struggle actually appeals to me, oddly. But the other thing was, I was doing quite a bit of media anyway as a kind of an add-on to being a doctor. So I wrote in the Sunday Independent. I would have done quite a lot of radio interviews. I would have done quite a lot of television interviews. I think, yeah, I'd become the expert in Operation Transformation. I'd made a couple of TV shows for RTE. So there was media in my life while I was working as a full-time doctor anyway. And that was grand. But what I started to realize most particularly about radio, I do like writing and I do like television, but not truthfully nearly as much as I like radio. And radio is a peculiar kind of a bug. A lot of people who work in it say they get bitten by it. It has an enormous appeal as a medium to work in. It's spontaneous. It's immediate. It can pivot from, live radio can pivot from something you had no idea you were about to do because news will break or something into something completely different. So there's an element of excitement there. And I realized I was doing this thing for about a year and a half. I was working on The Right Hook, which was George Hook's old radio drive time show on News Talk. And on a Friday, his show was different. It was a panel show. He didn't do it by himself. He did it with Shane Coleman, who is my co-host on News Talk Breakfast, and Dave McIntyre, who is a sports broadcaster with Sky News and Sky Sports. He did it with the two of them every week. And the three of them would do the show for 2.5 hours, and they would tear asunder the stories of the week, and they'd have the crack and they'd slag each other, and it was all of that. And somehow I was doing quite a lot of stuff on George's show, and somehow I got drafted in to cover for one of them, I think one week that they were off. And from there on, I became first sub. When Dave or Shane was off, I'd be drafted in, so that would become the threesome. And then over time, they decided, the production team, to not have me as a sub, to have me as a regular. So it became the four of us did that show every week from 4:30 till 7:00 for, it must have been about a year and a half. And I realized this, Jenna, I realized that it was my favorite part of my working week. That even though I was very happy in everything else I did, that I loved that job. I loved that gig. I loved Dave and I still do. I loved Shane and I still do. And I'm still very good friends with George as well. So across the board, I was working with people I liked and I found it really interesting and funny and exciting and it made me happy. And it was my favorite bit of the week. And at that point, I did start to think, wow, these guys do this full time. I wonder, could I do that? And that was where the germ of an idea came. It wasn't about leaving what I didn't like. It was about inching my way towards doing something that made me very happy and that I really, really liked. And that's been kind of my guiding principle all along. Do more of what you do like in life and you can't really go far wrong. I've never thought success was anything to do particularly with money or anything. To me, if you can get to do what makes you happy, then you're a success. And in that sense, I suppose I've been very lucky because I do get to do what I like. I do get to do a job that I really enjoy. And it took a bit of wriggling along, you know, as in kind of, there was lots of little pit stops and speed bumps and stuff along the way. And I mean, I remember talking in the beginning and saying, I wouldn't mind a show on, you know, radio, and people kind of laughing at me more or less to kind of go, but like, you're not a journalist. You've no background in politics and talk radio is all that. Like, how would you ever do that? And you're not a full-time broadcaster and you've never done any of these things. And I got told no an awful lot in the beginning. So I would also say that to people. Don't necessarily take no for an answer. I have always found a very effective response to somebody saying no is, okay, so you're saying no now. What do I have to do to turn that no into a yes? And people do not know how to respond to that refusal to take no for an answer. And sometimes being your own cheerleader and having that self-belief that you're just going to keep going, even if someone says no to you, is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It becomes, and yeah, just do more of what you enjoy. And when obstacles present themselves, back them out of the way. That would be my advice to people.
I think that is the perfect end and words of wisdom, a mouthful of motivation. So Ciara, Thank you so much for speaking to me. And where can people find your 100 Days of Walking?
Listen, all you have to, like, I'm on Instagram at Ciara Kelly Doc. I'm also on Facebook, and that's where they mostly are. News Talk posts the stuff out as well as News Talk Breakfast, and they're on Twitter as well. So it's on the three platforms. If you want to join in, you're absolutely right. Start today. Who cares if you didn't start on the 1st of January? It's the same deal. Use the hashtag. Post your videos, post your pictures, and join the movement, join the community.
Ciara, thank you so much.
Delighted.
I really hope you enjoyed that conversation. I know everyone is absolutely sick to death of the C word at this point, but I do feel it's important to talk about how to navigate the next few difficult months. If you found this episode useful or interesting, share it with a friend and be sure to tag myself and Ciara on social media. Leave a rating or review on iTunes. And I'll see you next time for another episode of The Other Side of Perfect.